DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands, or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. We're in the 5 o'clock hour on this Wednesday, November 19th. Hump day, we got past it. Hopefully you're done for the day on the downslide the rest of the week here. We were talking about the Steelers and Raiders, and I see we stirred up a fan there, Jake. So let's go right to the phone. We have Larry from Plymouth on the Raiders-Steelers rivalry. Larry.
Yes, the immaculate deception. I remember where I was sitting. I remember where I was watching that game. And I'll tell you, the ball, Bradshaw threw it to Frenchie Fuqua.
Yep.
It hit him and went to Franco Harris. That was illegal at that time. It couldn't go from one offensive player to another.
Correct.
am I right, Jake?
You're correct, Larry. That was the rule that they had back then. And
well, I heard that the John Madden heard a referee say, how much security do we have here?
Exactly.
And they said, well, we don't have too much. Touchdown!
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's safe to say, first off, George Atkinson, may he rest in peace. I know he passed away just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I loved when he would go on the NFL Network top 10 shows, and it never failed. That would always be the number one most controversial call in NFL history.
And I'm still mad about that game.
And here we are 53 years later, come December 23rd.
And you know, Jim Brown did not like Franco Harris, and you know why? Because Jim Brown always said that when Franco Harris knew he was going to get hit, he would run out of bounds.
I do remember that, yeah.
And Jim Brown never ran out of bounds. He said, I never laid out on a field 9 years. And they could say what they want about these new running backs, but he was the best of all time. And he was probably the best athlete in this country. He was the greatest lacrosse player in this country. He was a 13-letter man in high school.
That's amazing. And
he averaged 38 points a game in basketball. And same thing with him. Two of my favorite players, him and Dick Butkus. And Dick Butkus would not be able to play today because the way I remember him, they were playing the Cleveland Browns. And I think it was Leroy Kelly was running for the Leroy Browns, Cleveland Browns. And Dick Butkus actually tried to tear his head off.
Yeah, a lot of those guys from the 60s and the 70s, Larry, like Dick Butkus, Jack Tatum, Jack Lambert, for that matter. I mean, the list goes on and on. A lot of them have said that if they were to play in today's NFL, that they would definitely be suspended for a game or two just with the way
that things
have changed.
I know Jack Lambert said, why don't they put dresses on the quarterback?
Yeah.
Well, I would even extend that further. I mean, look at Lawrence Taylor and some of the things he did to quarterbacks. Yeah. They'd never be able to deal with that this day and age.
But, yes. And one of my favorite guys was Lyle Alzado.
Oh, he was a true Raider. He definitely fit the Raider.
Oh, my God. He started out with Denver, then he went to Cleveland, but his home was Oakland.
Oh, without a doubt. And
him and the twos.
Yeah. But I just loved how, again, George Atkinson, every single time that he would talk about it, he would say, that wasn't the immaculate reception, that was the immaculate deception.
Exactly.
I love those. And
exactly. I remember I'm sitting here and I see it in front of me.
And the other thing that I love too, Larry, was how every December 23rd, how Franco Harris would always call Phil Villapiano and would just give him crap about the Immaculate Reception. And those two love going back and forth. And they had planned to do it again in 2022 when, you know, Franco just passed away unexpectedly a few days before they were going to retire the 32 and 50th anniversary of the game.
Yeah, Jake, those were the days of real football.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got a text message in that I'll have both you, Larry, and Jake chime in on. It says, the only thing the older players have over modern players that they are far more aggressive. Modern players are way bigger, stronger, and faster. What's your take on that?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
They are. But another guy they say was the dirtiest player was Bill Romanowski.
Oh, yeah.
He was on something. I saw some interviews by I go on a computer, and he said that he was on something, and he had 18 concussions. And his last concussion, he got it, and he walked off the field, and the lights were spinning and everything. He said, I knew that was my last game.
Yeah.
But he said that Ronnie Law told him, don't ever take anything from anybody. And he said, I never did.
Yeah. Ronnie Lott, he's another one, too, of course.
Oh, Ronnie Lott. Ronnie Lott.
When he cut it.
You remember when they were going into the Super Bowl, and he had a bad finger, and they said, you can't play, and he said to the doctor, cut it off.
Yeah, he was I guess that's where Billy Bob Thornton on Landman, where they got that from, Rob.
Yeah.
But they were football players.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I got to say for today, but I had a good time talking to you.
It was great, Larry.
I appreciate you calling in, Larry.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you.
Okay. Down memory lane in the old days of football. And listen, you look at the Raiders back in the 70s and during this time, do you think the gangs in Oakland, and I understand it was because they were their local team, but if it wasn't for that violent nature of the team back then, would they have taken on their likeness with wearing their gear and such like that? It just wasn't about where they were from. It was about the aura that the team had about them as far as being dangerous and ruthless.
There definitely is an aura to the Raiders and to your Raider Nation. And it, you know, the thing that kills me, Rob, is Oakland Raiders.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
Just has such an incredible ring to it. It just sounds perfect. And of course, I mean, we've all seen and heard the, you know, Al Davis, when he moved the team to Los Angeles without the league's permission in the early 80s. Then, of course, moving back to Oakland and now they're in Las Vegas. And I don't know what it is. It just, when they were in Oakland and they played at the Coliseum, and that Coliseum was just so run down, and of course you still had the baseball mound in the middle of the field, you know, when they shared the stadium with the A's. There was just something about a game in Oakland with a stadium in that poor of condition. Raider Nation is as rabid as could be, and you would have Hell's Bells playing in the background when it came down to a third down. I mean, just an incredible atmosphere whatsoever. And yeah, they might be in Vegas, and yeah, I know Vegas is all glitz and glamour, but it just doesn't feel the same.
As James Harrison in the 70s would kill people on the field.
Yeah.
Well, while we're sticking with football here, I know we touched on it though, but James Franklin was announced today by Virginia Tech as the new head coach. He said he did learn a lot, told the Athletic director. He did learn a lot while at Penn State, and he's looking forward to leading the team. It's going to be interesting to see what recruits he takes that he already had landed for Penn State. Do they decommit and then recommit to Virginia Tech? Also, on the money end of that, you know, we're talking about $49 million that was left on the table. Not so much now. I think it's somewhere in the realm of $8 or $9 million. Yeah. Dollars. That's all that Penn State's going to, I shouldn't say that's all. They could pay me that and I'd be happy with it. But that's what Penn State's, which is a big difference from $49 million. So that's the difference that they'll have to pay to match James Franklin's salary while at Virginia Tech. And I think looking at the information that's out there now, I think where I called it either late last week or early this week to where he knows that the money's being made up by Penn State, so he didn't have to demand a big salary from Virginia Tech, but I think he is holding them to account to pay assistant coaches, coordinators, more than they would normally get in that situation being at Virginia Tech, so he could bring in the best talent that he can. And it appears that, you know, with their salary system and that they have and the money they're going to save on the head coach position, you know, he can bring in some top talent that he's looking at, and who that's going to be is going to be interesting. Jake, are you getting any inkling on who we might be pulling with? There's a lot of coaching positions out there available.
There definitely is a lot of coaching as far as assistants go, as far as position coaches, coordinators, like we've talked about. And I haven't really looked into anything just yet, but like you alluded to yesterday, Rob, I'm sure some of these kids that committed to Penn State, I'm sure they're probably, you know, going to do a complete 360 and have a change of heart and want to follow him to Virginia Tech. Because the one thing I would say about James Franklin, whether it was his time at Vanderbilt, his time at Penn State, which lasted 11 years, I mean, when it comes to the X's and O's of the game, you know, I hate to say it, but it feels like the weaker the opponent, the better that they were performing. It's just, again, couldn't get past Ohio State, couldn't get past Michigan. But as far as recruiting goes, as far as recruiting, as far as getting kids from, again, parts of Pennsylvania or wherever, I felt like that's definitely been his bread and butter as a head coach. And like you talked about, I think that he definitely learned a lot from his time at Vanderbilt that he applied to Penn State. And, of course, just the way that things ended with all the hype and all the buzz that there was about Penn State this year and how things unraveled as quick as they did, I think I wouldn't doubt that he's definitely learned from those mistakes and those shortcomings. And the thing is, again, he took over Vanderbilt when they were 2-10 and made them a reputable team. Penn State, it was different in a sense that, I mean, the program was decent under Bill O'Brien. It was just everything else, you know, everything else from the outside, of course, with the sanctions and whatnot. And Virginia Tech, I would say, is a team, they were relatively decent in the 90s and in the 2000s, but the last couple of years especially, like, they've definitely been struggling. So I could understand the hiring as far as, you know, hey, he's had a track record with making teams better, whether it's Vanderbilt, whether it's Penn State. I think that's what they're banking on. I don't know if it's going to be a quick fix, but yeah, we're just
if he brings an offensive offense and defense coordinator that he can lean on and let them make the decisions while the game's playing. You know, obviously you're the head coach, you have the final say, but you got to get people you trust in to make those decisions and let them make those decisions. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I think he hopefully learned. The other thing is, you know, listen, he was fired from a job a lot of people said he couldn't be fired from. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be humbling. And you saw the change towards the end to where, you know, just a game or two before he was fired, it was everyone else's fault but his. And that morphed very quickly to, listen, I'm the buck stops with me. I'm in charge. You know, it's my fault.
Yeah. The way that he handled the UCLA loss and, of course, talking about the travel out to California and then not waiting until, you know, waiting until Monday to sort of own up to a poor performance like that, to me, I felt like that was definitely the beginning of the end. That's where things started to snowball because, again, when everyone expected the Oregon loss, UCLA was shocking, and then the Northwestern loss, just, again, like I talked about before, the body language that he showed, just sort of looking around. I mean, you know, hugging and high-fiving every player. I know Mike Vrabel has been doing it with the Patriots, and look at what they're doing. But it was different because I think James sort of knew at that moment, writing's on the wall, I'm done. There's, with how quickly things fell apart, there was no way in hell I'm going to finish the season here. And, I mean, here we were that Sunday. It was like right before 2 o'clock they announced that he was fired.
So hopefully, you know, there's that too. And I would like to see him bring in some coordinators that he lets do their job. And he's got the money to do that now, so hopefully that's exactly what he does, and that's who he attracts. I guess only time will tell, but we'll see. Yeah. But a lot of people are going to be watching.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.